Chapter 6. Hostiles. The car sped down the avenue past the remaining hordes of workers commuting to their assembly line jobs. Adrian didn't bother with the siren. There was little traffic to negotiate save for the buses and patrols in operation. The report had come in barely 5 minutes after Lucy completed her initial training.
4 down, 2 minors, possible hostiles still on site. Let's go,
had been Adrian's first and only words as he'd grabbed her from the training room. As they drove, they passed a clutch of protesters standing outside the metro station, each wearing a white armband. Between them, they held a banner carrying the simple slogan they were chanting, "Equal rations for all." Adrian swerved around the final corner and brought the car to a halt in front of a detached house several miles from the lab. The front door was open, but there were no signs of people around.
"Stay sharp,"
said Adrian, leaping out and drawing his handgun. Lucy followed him across the yard to the house. The afternoon air was mild, affirming spring's arrival. Adrian clicked on his flashlight and called into the house.
"Health Intelligence, anyone here?"
he called out, leading through the reception hall, past the living room, and into a kitchen.
"Oh, God,"
said Lucy, trying not to retch. A woman lay face down on the tiles. The skin across her neck and back had been peeled away and hung over her hips like a sarong. Her exposed muscles and tendons were losing their red pigmentation and fading to a translucent purple. Along her spine, her central nervous system had been torn out, such that it lay strewn over the surrounding tiles. The woman's degrading flesh formed a gloopy outline around her body, extending a foot in every direction.
"Get photos,"
said Adrian, casting his flashlight around the dank space and checking the back doors and windows. Lucy took a photo of the woman's body from a few angles, then hurried after Adrian as he headed upstairs.
"You take the rooms on the right. I'll go left,"
said Adrian, leading on. Lucy raised her flashlight and pistol and made her way into the first room, where the blinds were drawn. 2 child-sized beds stood on either side of the room, separated by a mobile of the planets which hung from the ceiling. From the threshold, she knelt down and shone the light under both beds. They were clear, save for discarded clothes and toys. The floorboards creaked as she stood up and moved to inspect closer, approaching the right-hand bed first. The blanket was ruffled and bulged randomly. With the light held high, she eased the pistol tip under the cover and flicked it out of the way. With her breath held, she leapt back, sighing with relief at the unblemished mattress and sheet she uncovered. The second bed was empty too, so she moved on to the bathroom. With barely a foot in the door, she recoiled in horror.
"In here!"
she cried, training her gun inside. Adrian emerged from a far room and took up position beside her.
"Is it a hostile?" he said, gun drawn.
"They're in there. The bodies,"
said Lucy, her eyes wide with fear. Adrian's flashlight bounced off the cabinet mirror, dazzling Lucy. He dipped it and edged forwards.
"Clear,"
he said after a moment, beckoning Lucy inside the room. She braced herself to confront the room once more and followed him in.
"Photos, quickly,"
said Adrian, inspecting the tiles for cracks. Lucy approached the bathtub. A rubber duck floated idly across the crimson water. Beside it, 2 toddlers lay face down, partially submerged by the water. Their backs had been flayed like their mother's. Slumped over the rim of the bath was a kneeling man. His shirt sleeves were rolled up and his wrists submerged in the bathwater. His head was dipped down beneath his raised arms, and his back arched inwards as if he was being whipped. Liquefying flesh dripped from the skin peeled over his shoulders, adding to the growing puddle around him.
"This is one of the worst I've seen,"
said Adrian, returning to the doorway. Lucy nodded, afraid she would vomit if she tried to speak.
"You'll get used to it, Lucy,"
he added bleakly. He looked broken. Lucy's eyes widened as something shifted beyond Adrian's shoulder.
"Get down!"
she cried, lifting her pistol and firing. A ferret-like creature pounced from the ceiling towards Adrian's neck. Its sleek fur rippled as Lucy's bullets felled it mid-flight.
"Christ!"
yelled Adrian, flinching. Lucy's bullet had pierced the creature's shoulder. The ridges along its furry spine bristled as the splayed predator twitched and swiped at Adrian, who swiftly unloaded two more rounds into its body. Lucy cast her flashlight around the hall for others.
Clear,
she called breathlessly. Adrian lost no time in photographing the bleeding specimen and resuming the search.
Look, it came from the guest room,
he said, tracing the scuff marks on the molding. Lucy followed him into the room where a curtain rippled in the wind. Adrian approached silently, clutching his pistol. Lucy took aim and braced herself as he swept the curtain back.
I think we found the point of entry,
said Adrian, examining the broken window pane. He photographed pieces of fur that had been caught in between the shards of glass.
How do people guard against that? We're a story up. Are we supposed to board every window of every occupied building?
Said Lucy.
If that's what it takes, then yes. If you can think of an alternative, please share it,
said Adrian, sliding the window frame up and peering out to examine the surrounding wall. Lucy considered the box of white powder that had saved her and Lopez back at Camp Oscar. Her hand absent-mindedly moved to her abdomen as she thought of the abortive growth it had induced. She shuddered and changed the focus.
You mentioned drones yesterday. Could we hunt the creatures?
Said Lucy. Adrian closed the window and left the room. His thick-soled boots echoed off the wooden staircase as he descended.
Adrian?
Said Lucy, following him out to the front yard.
We'll send over a cleanup team to take care of the bodies by nightfall,
he said, heading for the car.
Seriously? That's it?
What's it?
Wooden planks? That's our plan against those wildcat things? Board up every window and hope they don't learn to chew wood? No wonder that family died.
It's true, isn't it? We really don't have a plan, she said despondently.
What were you expecting?
Something a little more high-tech.
Armed drones would cause too much collateral damage. We can only use them outside the walls. Drones inside the city give us eyes only. Killing actual targets requires infantry support, and that's a struggle right now.
Is there anywhere we're not struggling?
You don't like it here?
Leave.
No one's keeping you,
said Adrian, climbing into the driver's seat.
What's that supposed to mean?
Adrian ignored her and drew his seatbelt.
Adrian,
she said. He pulled the door shut. Lucy stepped out directly in front of the car and slammed her palms on the hood.
Look at me! Tell me what the hell your problem is!
She demanded. He flung the door open and leapt out of the car, advancing toward Lucy with a boiling anger.
My problem?
He said, bearing down on her.
Yes, Adrian, tell me your problem!
Yelled Lucy, squaring up to him. He grabbed her jacket and slammed her backwards against the hood.
You made it and he didn't,
he yelled, his face inches from hers. Spittle flew from his mouth as he shouted. Every muscle in his face contorted into an expression of the greatest pain and anger a human can feel.
You made it. You,
he repeated, breaking down in tears and slackening his grip on Lucy. Lucy edged out from beneath him without resistance. Adrian rolled onto his back and slid to the ground. Lucy took a moment to compose herself, then took a seat on the road beside him, where he sat clutching his knees to his chest. Lucy shuffled closer and gently drew his head onto her shoulder. She held him, silently, and allowed his shuddering, sobbing body to shake her torso while she stared at the asphalt. After a minute, Adrian's tears subsided and he brushed Lucy off, stumbling onto the sidewalk to compose himself privately. Lucy listened to the wind as it whistled through nearby branches, caressing the buds clinging to each offshoot. Dan would never have dreamed of raising a hand to her. Her eyes filled with tears as she imagined him witnessing what had just happened, the pain and disbelief he would have felt.
I'm so sorry,
said Adrian, slumping down beside Lucy once more.
So sorry,
he repeated.
I've lost both my children, and I'm trying to keep a city alive with guesswork. How can I possibly protect 100,000 people when I've failed the ones I loved the most?
He said, his voice cracking.
That makes two of us,
said Lucy, her gaze tracing aimless loops between the cracks in the tar. A radio in Adrian's car crackled.
Incident reported at DuPont Circle Chemical Plant. Requesting urgent attendance. Over.
hissed the operator.
I won't fail you again, Lucy. There are so few people I can trust in this city. Please forgive me, said Adrian earnestly.
She embraced him tightly as the radio reiterated its urgent call.
You sure you want to do this again?
Someone's got to have your back. I owe Dan that much. Let's go, said Lucy, rising up and extending him a hand. Lucy's head swam with exhaustion as she walked home from the bus stop after work that evening. With an hour of twilight before curfew, the streetlights were on, guiding her way back to the residence. Each attack scene they'd visited was unique. In the first, a beast had tailgated a Jeep inside the city's west gate. It was killed in the security courtyard, but not before it had wiped out two of the passengers. The second investigation was more disquieting altogether. At first appearance, it bore the hallmarks of another wildcat attack like the one that morning. The victim's neck was flayed, there were scuff marks on the ceiling, and there was fur caught on the door latch. But as Lucy had spotted, there were no signs of degradation on the body. Yet the rigor mortis and the temperature of corpse suggested the process should have been well underway. Together, she and Adrian came to the grim realization that what they were looking at was straight-up murder. Adrian said it wasn't their place to investigate homicides, that he was referring the case to the military police, but three things troubled Lucy. Firstly, the sophistication of the attempt to frame the murder as a beast attack. Secondly, the ordinary status of the victim. This wasn't an assassination of a high-level figure. This was a community-level grudge that had escalated lethally. Thirdly, and most significantly, she was struck by how quickly her sense of horror at each scene had given way to fascination. She was good at spotting the clues, and, dare she admit it, she enjoyed piecing the evidence together and trying to identify a low-tech solution that could be rolled out to prevent future attacks. Although Adrian was unaware, Lucy knew she was entering each attack scene with a degree of immunity. So long as she kept her wits about her, she had the upper hand. She was the one pursuing the creatures. She had the power. With Adrian opening up to her, it also felt like she was renting time back with Dan, getting glimpses of his personality and his love for precious moments each hour. For the first time since the train crash, she felt something approaching contentment.
"Hey, stop!"
cried a voice, dragging her out of her thoughts abruptly. A patrol truck swerved towards her and screeched to a halt. She shielded her eyes from the headlights where a uniformed soldier leapt out and dashed towards her.
"I didn't hear the curfew, sorry,"
called Lucy, raising her arms in surrender.
"I thought I'd never see you again,"
cried the voice, which now sounded familiar as a pair of arms wrapped around her in a fierce embrace. Lucy broke away and took in the figure properly.
I can't believe you made it out of Boston,"
she stammered with amazement, staring at Lopez.
"I can say the same to you,"
said the major, grinning. She blinked at him several times, then laughed with delight and grabbed him in a reciprocal hug.
"I can't believe you're here,"
he said excitedly.
"You look like you're cured. Have the lesions gone?"
said Lucy, lowering her voice.
"We can't discuss that here,"
said Lopez, glancing around. An incoherent call crackled from his radio.
"I need to go.
I'm on duty. Where's your block social tomorrow?"
"What?
Tomorrow's Sunday. Is this your first week here? Oh, this is insane! Okay, I'll look up your residence and find out where your block's going. I can meet you there. We'll catch up. I really have to go, but it's so good to see you. I'm glad you're not, you know."
"Stoned to death?" snorted Lucy.
"Yeah, that."
He grinned at her, then hurried back to his truck, speeding away to make up the lost time.
"Share it," said Fliss, as they walked to the social the next morning.
"Share what?"
"That thing on your mind, the one that keeps making you frown and stare into the distance."
"What, are you now my counselor?" said Lucy, scowling.
"Something like that."
"Hey, so what's with those white armband people?" said Lucy as they approached a crowd of supporters.
"They're the city's opposition party. Well, not officially, not yet, anyway. I went to one of their neighborhood meetings last night. They wanted to give me a white armband, but I said no. I figured that's more of a third meeting kind of move. They were impressive, though. Stuff they said made sense. They reckon they've already got a fifth of the city backing them, said Fliss.
They slowed their walk and joined the crowd for a moment. The listeners were gathered in a horseshoe around a charismatic speaker who stood several feet above the crowd, using a bench as a podium. Her skin was darker than Lucy's, but lighter than Dan's had been. It was a light brown somewhere in the middle. Her long black hair was thick and wavy. Lucy wondered how she'd managed to avoid having to shear it off. The speaker wore a white armband, too. She spoke with the syntactical rhythms of a highly educated renegade, carefully sculpting the contour of each sentence to build on the last, conducting the enraptured crowd with such skill that they could have been her orchestra. Her hands extended regularly to emphasize key points with precision before returning to her central power stance. A soldier made his way to the front of the crowd and stood before the bench. Lucy couldn't hear what he said, but the master orator was all too happy to shed light on the interloper's intentions and put his case before the assembled jury.
"I would gladly step down, sir, but before I do so, could you kindly inform us of what law I'm breaking? Sir? I would venture that I'm not disturbing the peace, but rather that I am stepping up to defend it. Peace is a fragile commodity in these times, and one we must each be prepared to defend with words, civility, and courage. So you see, sir, I cannot step down, for I have a duty to these good people to ensure their rights are upheld by the present government,"
proclaimed the woman proudly. The soldier tried to coax her down, extending an arm upwards, but the wily speaker seized upon this intervention as further ammunition.
"It is my constitutional right to stand on this street and proclaim the truth. It is this crowd's constitutional right to hear it. Freedom of speech is the cornerstone of our democracy, from the foundations of this bench to the stones of the Lincoln Memorial and the soles of your very boots. I will defend these rights peacefully, with every breath in my body, for the sake of each human being inside these walls, including you and your colleagues, sir,"
declared the woman to cries of approval from the motley jury. The soldier gave up and slunk out of the crowd to rejoin his colleague across the street, who was monitoring the group with suspicion. Some of the crowd booed the soldier as he departed, but the woman quickly doused such reactions.
"Our uniformed compatriots are only doing their best. But how can they be expected to get it right every time when no one really knows who's leading them? Is it the Attorney General? Is it the Joint Chiefs? It's certainly not the democratically elected President of the United States, because we don't have one. It's been 8 months, and we still don't know who's leading this country. The line of succession has become a wall of obfuscation. We deserve transparency, accountability. We deserve the truth. It is ours by right."
The crowd cheered in approval, with pockets of clapping and whooping.
"I ask you to sign our petition today. We are the people's voice, and we are lobbying the government to publish the truth about the current power structure, the truth about ration inequality, and the truth about the South. If you're unsure, just ask yourself, what are they not telling us?"
The woman hopped down from the bench and began shaking hands emphatically, while two assistants circulated through the crowd with clipboards, gathering names and signatures. Half the crowd seemed keen to commit their names to paper. The other half dispersed in twos and threes, discussing what they'd heard with a mixture of curiosity and cynicism.
"That's Rhea," said Fliss, her eyes wide with admiration as she and Lucy continued on their way to the social.
"You know her?" said Lucy, clocking several members of their residence who were stopping to sign the petition and talk to the enigmatic woman.
"They told us about her in the meeting. They're hoping she'll speak at our group soon, but obviously she's in high demand all across town."
"I don't see that many people signing," said Lucy, noting the number of passers-by, the majority of whom were giving the white armband wearers a wide berth.
"It's early days. Rhea only set up the people's voice a few weeks ago. Hey, are we in a hurry?"
"Sorry, kinda, yeah. I don't want to be late for the social. said Lucy, as Jack passed by with some guys from the canteen.
But isn't it all day?
Said Fliss, quick-stepping to match Lucy's brisk march. I'm meeting someone there.
Is it that senator detective guy? Just being honest here, he seems a little old for you.
Ew, no, it's someone else. Someone from... Lucy trailed off as she paused to consider how little time she'd actually known Lopez for. A few weeks at best. Given what they'd been through, though, it felt like so much longer. He'd been an asshole for so much of it. Then again, so had she.
I'm sorry I'm late, said Lopez, giving Lucy a pat on the shoulder as he arrived.
She half stood to give him a hug, but he was already on his way to the other side of the table.
Jack, let's go check out the soccer, said Fliss,
nudging her brother away from his spot next to Lucy. He lifted his sling off the table gingerly as he stood. Fliss pulled an, oh my god, face behind Lopez as she left the table, giving Lucy a wink. Lucy shook her head. If the girl knew just the half of it, she wouldn't be thinking along those lines.
I got held up on a call out. Neighbors arguing over rations. The usual.
How are you? You're alive, which is amazing, said Lopez.
I could say the same to you. Last I saw you, you were going on a kamikaze mission against the faithful, said Lucy, sipping her free state-provided lemonade.
I beat them. There were only two left after the others split between you and the doc. Is she here too?
Said Lopez, swiveling around to take in the rest of the casino. The venue was crammed with giddy workers, all gambling with chips that carried no monetary value, seizing the opportunity to stoke their entire sense of universal justice on the flick of the dealer's next card. In all corners of the room, workers laughed, danced, made out, and briefly forgot the impending extinction of their species. Lopez returned his attention to Lucy. From her face, he realized Charlie hadn't made it.
Oh, I'm sorry. What happened to her?
Said Lopez. The faithful. They stoned her. I saw it.
Sons of bitches. But they didn't catch you?
Lucy laughed bitterly, remembering the short-lived hope she'd felt in her mom's house when Shona had found her, and cursing her own naivety.
I joined them, said Lucy, taking a sip.
What?
Said Lopez, his face falling.
It was the only way to survive.
You didn't,
began Lopez.
I didn't stone anyone. I hid among them until they discovered I was infected. In the end, I had to...
Lucy closed her eyes. She felt Lopez place a hand on hers.
It's okay. I get it. You did what you had to do. You're here now, and that's what matters,
he said with an understanding look. Lucy forced a smile as she drew her hand back sharply.
How about you?
Luck chose to keep me alive. That and 2 decades of advanced combat training. Turns out those faithful guys are really good with rocks, but not so great with guns.
I'm not talking about them, I mean you. Mentally, I thought you'd had it.
I found the reason to live.
Which is?
Same one I always had. I just started believing in it again.
And here you are.
Lopez gave a sage tilt of his head and opened his palms in acknowledgement.
Ugh, you always loved the military,
said Lucy bitterly.
Oh, fuck off, not this again,
said Lopez, slamming his glass down on the table and drawing the eyes of some nearby gamblers.
I'm yanking your chain. God, that was too easy, said Lucy with a flicker of a smile. I'm glad you're alive, and I'm glad it's as part of a functioning U.S. Army. Is that better?
You should join. We're short on recruits.
Oh, you must be desperate. What was it you called me? A damned liability?
Said Lucy, leaning back in her chair.
If I did, then it was the understatement of the century, chuckled Lopez.
He paused and looked at Lucy seriously for a moment.
I was wrong about you, young. A lot of the things I said would also fall into that category. What you did for me in New York showed an integrity I should have acknowledged a lot sooner. You would make any regiment proud.
Is that your attempt at an apology?
Was it bad?
Horrible. A damned rookie could have done it better,
chuckled Lucy. Her laughter grew and grew until she was wiping tears from her eyes. Lopez, too, as she considered the magnitude of the traumas they'd faced and the meltdowns they'd had at each turn.
That was the least adequate apology in history for the level of shit you served up from day one, declared Lucy, thumping the table with laughter. She sighed as the laughter petered out to a contented titter, and she took another sip. Whatever. I'll take it. Apology accepted, she said, sighing.
Your turn, rookie,
said Lopez, tilting his head forwards. Fine. I'm sorry I was an out-of-control, live-wire douchebag. Happy?
Maybe. Too soon to tell, really. I reckon you're still a live-wire.
I'm a highly respectable member of society, I'll have you know. Before the apocalypse, I used to volunteer at a homeless shelter, avoid plastic packaging, and offset all my flights.
Oh, so you used to be an in-control douchebag.
Volunteering does not make someone a douche.
No, but lying about it to sound good does.
God damn it. Fine, but the other two are true.
Oh, really? When are they building your statue?
Pretty soon, I heard. They just gotta rebuild civilization first. Then they're getting right on it.
So, Tuesday?
Yeah, totally. The pair settled down and drank together in silence. Roars of joy and agony sprung up from a neighboring table as a spinning roulette wheel delivered its verdict.
I'm sorry I put you in danger. You made up for it.
Still, though, I had a lot of anger. I blamed you for all of it. That was wrong.
Wait a minute, is that how people apologize?
Pretty good, right?
It was fantastic. For a sixth grader.
Lissy looked at him pointedly.
All right, apology accepted. I guess I blamed you for stuff, too. I thought I was doing the right thing, being a hard ass. But I should have known better. Truth is, I was losing control of the last thing I understood in this world, and it terrified me. I'm serious, though. We're low on numbers, and we could use you.
Sorry, Major, I'm taken, said Lucy, swinging her feet up onto the empty chair beside her.
What's your assignment?
Health intelligence. Responding to crime scenes and basically saving the day. Just minus any saving. We roll in late and count the bodies. You? Said Lucy glumly.
Patrols. I run a detachment that handles civil order and beast incursions along the northeast walls. We get updates from your department all the time. New creatures and attack patterns to watch out for. It's a lot to keep on top of. The ground's constantly shifting.
But you're safe, right? Lopez glanced around the casino.
We can't talk about that here.
Bullshit. You're alive. You're healed. We can't not talk about it.
Lucy, I'm not healed,
whispered Lopez. Lucy's mouth opened a fraction. She leaned in further.
I'm still on the meds. I raided a bunch of places on the way to the city. The drugs are keeping most of the symptoms at bay. I reckon I've got enough pills for 6 months. 3 if we need to share them. But we'll have to make a game plan to get more, he said, casting his eyes around suspiciously.
Have you been to the hospital or told anyone about it?
Have you?
Lucy slumped back in her chair.
Exactly. Because you know they're not going to take kindly to people showing up with some alien disease. They barely give out morphine for operations these days. You and I are low on the wait list, I can tell you that.
A waiter passed by and Lopez flagged him down.
Hey, 2 more,
he said cordially. The guy gave him a filthy look and slouched off. The disappearance of tipping looked set to finish off America's service industry.
How are you liking your first Sunday?
Said Lopez, gesturing to the room.
It doesn't feel real, said Lucy, surveying the joviality around her. It's totally political. People were overworked, overstressed. They were getting sick and restless and fighting each other. The rations aren't enough, and continuous working was crushing morale, so the government brought in half a weekend to keep people sane and healthy enough to keep going. First good decision they've made. Or at least that's what people tell me.
The waiter returned and placed their drinks on the table, giving each of their wrists a second stamp. That's your allowance for the day, he said, clearing the empty bottles as he left. Lucy reached for her lemonade and her hand brushed Lopez's. They had a polite standoff as they each shifted to the alternate bottle and back, trying to offer up the other. Lopez grinned at her as he snatched up a bottle and took a swig before Lucy could get to it. He set it back down on the table and opened his mouth to speak, only to be cut off by the crackle of his radio. Another urgent call out.
God damn it. I was just starting to enjoy not entirely hating you.
Don't worry. I'll keep hating for the both of us, said Lucy with a shrug.
I heard a rumor there'll be a dance next weekend. I'd love to go with you.
Are you serious? Said Lucy, scowling.
Hey, I'm widowed and probably gonna die within the year. What's not to like?
You were married?
I had a life before this. Shocking, I know. Come on, it'll be fun. We can slow dance, and each pretend the other's someone else. It'll be like dancing with a warm ghost.
You really are something, you know that?
So, is that a yes?
I guess it's not a no. Lopez's radio chirped again.
Crap, I really gotta go. I'll see you,
he said, pivoting away from the table. He gave her a fleeting wave, bumping into a defunct slot machine as he paced out of the casino. Lucy stared absently at a nearby poker game, reflecting on the whole baffling exchange. Usually, the broom could hardly be further up the major's ass, but maybe he pulled it out a bit on Sundays. Fliss flopped down into Lopez's vacant seat and tilted her head forwards, raising her eyebrows to fix Lucy with a provocative, knowing look.
Well? Said Fliss expectantly.
Well, what? Said Lucy, taking a sip and looking away.
I knew it,
said Fliss, clapping her hands.
You know Jack. Oh, right. My lips are totally sealed.
No, that's the opposite of what I mean. The casino lights dipped and people took their seats around the card tables and bars as a projector blinked into life.
Oh, someone said there'd be a movie. I hope it's a comedy. I love comedies,
said Fliss excitedly as the operator dragged some files around clumsily on the projected desktop. They opened a folder and Anchorman flashed up to the cheers of Fliss and half the room and the groans of the others. The screen toggled to a folder called PSAs and a clip was launched. The footage was from the Oval Office. A tired-looking woman of 70 or so sat behind the desk in a suit and addressed the audience directly.
My fellow Americans, happy Sunday. I hope you're enjoying a well-earned rest today. Make the most of it, because tomorrow we resume our mission to rebuild the free world. In these trying times, we must remember to look out for one another. We've had reports of increased ration theft. This is unacceptable. It is un-American. To steal from your fellow countrymen at a time like this, we will not tolerate it. As of today, the sentence for ration theft is being increased to 3 months of labor, doubling to 6 months for repeat offenders. If you suspect someone, report them immediately, and they will face the justice they deserve. We're in this together, people. So let's do this together. May God bless you all.
Some of the crowd applauded, while others wearing white armbands muttered in disapproval. Both sides were swiftly hushed by the rest of the room as the main film began, to the excited whoops of many. Lucy felt an arm on her shoulder.
Something's come up,
said Adrian, keeping his voice down.
It's her day off, dude,
said Fliss, waggling her cola bottle.
Lucy,
said Adrian, ignoring Fliss and heading for the exit.
I better go. I'll see you for dinner, said Lucy, giving Fliss a pat on the back and following after Adrian.
She left the casino behind and crossed the sunny boulevard to his car.
Where are we going? Said Lucy as they pulled away.
The medical council is holding an emergency meeting. New evidence has come to light which directly impacts our work. I need to be there, and as my unofficial deputy, I want you there too, so you're up to speed, said Adrian.
They passed a park filled with people playing and watching touch football, then pulled up beside a squat, brutalist concrete office building. An inscription on the concrete informed Lucy it was the Department of Health and Human Services. Adrian grabbed a folder from the trunk, then hurried inside, with Lucy in tow. The interior was softer than the harsh concrete facade had suggested, with a polished stone floor in the atrium and luscious wooden paneling on the reception wall. As they passed through security and deeper into the building, the overhead lights picked up where the natural light left off. Adrian pushed a meeting room door open and ushered Lucy inside.
Take a seat. I'll be right back,
said Adrian, making a beeline for the chairperson who was shuffling papers at the end of the long oval table. Officials in suits and uniforms stood around the room, conversing in clusters of two and three. Lucy surveyed the seating plan and skirted the table until she found health intelligence.
There was only one seat designated. She glanced around and spotted a spare further along, which she dragged into place, blushing as she clanged it against another metal chair leg on the way, drawing a few intrigued looks.
"We're tight on time, people, so let's begin," said the chair, calling the room to attention as Adrian took his place beside Lucy. The chair wore her auburn hair in a tight ponytail. She sported a thick, baggy shell suit, giving her a rough-and-ready look more suited to a bomb disposal squad. It was at odds with her square-framed glasses and collared shirt. She leaned forwards and pressed the record button on a smartphone, which she slid along the table into the center.
"This is an extraordinary meeting of the Wartime Medical Council. For the record, the following departments are represented: Public Health, Army R&D, Agriculture, Military Police, Health Intelligence, and consultant representatives from the hospital."
The door swung open and a rosy-cheeked man entered, puffing.
"Sorry I'm late, everyone, Madam Chair," he added, doffing an imaginary cap.
"Let the record show that the Director of Pathology has joined the meeting," said the chair.
"I've just come from an examination of Patient One, who is fully contained and in a stable condition for now. A truly remarkable discovery, Adrian. My commendations," said the rosy man, hurrying to his place at the table opposite Lucy.
He wore an open-collar, soft pink shirt with a faint purple grid pattern running through it, tucked into navy-colored suit pants, underlined by a pair of shabby-looking sneakers. His white lab coat was marked by scuff marks along the hems.
"Senator, I believe you're going to brief us," said the chair, inviting Adrian to stand.
"Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we begin, may I introduce my newest colleague to you all. This is Lucy Young. She was one of the only survivors from the San Francisco evacuation train and has gathered extensive operational knowledge of the creature's habits and capabilities," said Adrian, gesturing to Lucy. She nodded awkwardly at the room full of academics who regarded her with curiosity.
"Yesterday, a field team discovered what we believe is the next phase of D4's evolution, a parasitic strain which is capable of infecting a human host. It's different to the spores and degradation agents we've encountered so far," said Adrian.
"You discovered this yesterday?" objected Public Health. "Why weren't we informed immediately?"
"There are enough rumors floating around this city as it is, without us circulating unverified information. We wanted to be sure we understood what we were dealing with. My team was building a pathogen profile based on the field team's reports. We had planned a further reconnoiter to the discovery site to collect samples, but events have overtaken us. The pathogen is in the city. I will now call our primary witness," said Adrian, signaling to the soldier on the door.
The young soldier obliged, ushering in another uniformed man of similar age. The newcomer stood to attention and stared at the wall above the chairwoman's head, ready to address questions from any panel member.
"Private Hofstein, please tell the council what you told us," said Adrian.
"Yes, sir. We was on a mission to find a senator. Her convoy was hit in Maryland. We had a rendezvous address, but when we got to the house, she wasn't there. There was just three civilians. Well, two was dead already, but one was alive. They was infected with some kind of disease or something. They all had these big rashes across their faces, their hands and necks. It looked something bad," said the soldier.
"For the record, I'm showing footage taken by the witness," said Adrian, launching a clip on the meeting room projector.
The camera panned clumsily around the house. The quality and illumination suggested it had been filmed on a phone. The room held three bodies, all severely lesioned. The camera focused on the nearest corpse, showing the extent of the skin damage. In the background, the lone survivor was feebly calling out for help, raising a shaky arm upward to another soldier who kept his distance. The bodies on screen looked to be at the peak of their infection. Lucy shifted in her seat and tugged the hem of her jacket down, suddenly aware of her faded scars.
"Private," said Adrian, "can you describe how Patient One became infected?"
"Yes, sir. We reckon the first two folk in this house done killed themselves, or maybe they made a pact with the third light because they'd been shot in the head, so they was gone. But this last guy was too weak to reach the gun, so he's begging us to do it for him. But at that same time, he's tripping, calling us demons and such like that."
"What did you do?"
asked the military police rep from across the table.
I didn't do nothing. Our commander puts the gun in the guy's hand and moves it to his head. Guy kills himself.
You believe that's when patient one became infected? Said Adrian.
He touched the guy's hand, which I thought was stupid because I wouldn't have done that. Then when we get back to the barracks, I seen his back in the showers, and it's looking like what you saw on there,
said the soldier, pointing to the projector.
Exactly the same?
Probed the rep from public health.
Nah, smaller. It one is developed, but it was definitely the same thing grown on his skin as was in that house,
said the soldier.
And you're fine? Said the hospital rep.
If I may jump in here, I've examined this soldier and the two others present on the mission. None of them have developed any symptoms. This suggests to me this pathogen is contact-based, not airborne, said the director of pathology.
Well, that's good news. Another outbreak like the spores and we'd be finished, said the public health rep.
What's the status of patient one? Said the chair.
Major Lopez is cooperating with our investigations, but his prognosis is, well,
you all saw the footage.
Our primary concern is containment. We can't risk an outbreak among the population,
said the director. A cold dread swept over Lucy as Lopez's name echoed in her ears.
Senator, you're coordinating the response to this new strain of the pathogen. What's your proposal? Said the chair.
I agree with Harvey that containment is our number one priority. Given the overwhelming pressure on medical and laboratory resources, it would be irresponsible to pursue further research on this pathogen at this time if there's the slightest risk of it being transmitted from the lab into the healthy population. We know the condition is terminal and entails great suffering. I believe it is in the city's best interests and the patient's best interest that we humanely euthanize the patient immediately and eliminate any risk of further internal contagion, said Adrian.
You're proposing to execute a serving soldier?
Said the military police rep.
Seems extreme, agreed the agriculture official.
It is. It's directly proportionate to the threat we face, said Adrian.
I accept the significant pressure we face on resources, but I think this level of utilitarianism is a step too far. We risk opening the floodgates to terminating other lives in the name of pragmatism. By your logic, we should be euthanizing criminals too, and dispensing with any notion of civility and constitutional rights,
argued the hospital rep.
I don't believe that's an appropriate comparison, but it nonetheless supports my point. Human life is the most precious and vulnerable thing we have. With your prisoner's example, euthanasia would be unacceptable because we know there's hope for them. With rehabilitation and reintegration, they can play a positive and integral role in society again, said Adrian.
Senator, by your own admission, it would therefore be madness to throw away human life where there's hope. We've not even explored the possibility of a cure yet,
said the Army R&D rep.
A cure is not a quick fix. It's an emotional distraction that will cost lives elsewhere. Treatments take decades to develop, and that was before we lost 95% of the scientific community, said Adrian.
On that point, I'm minded to agree with the senator. Food security is rapidly becoming our greatest threat. We should be focusing every spare hour of labor and brain power on that,
said the agriculture representative.
This is an awful predicament, but we must approach it rationally. The footage we've just seen shows us we have only two options right now. Either we watch Major Lopez, a decorated soldier, endure an agonizing, degenerative death, or we provide a compassionate way out. We can offer him a dignified end that doesn't require days or even weeks of supervised laboratory time. It spares him needless suffering, and it protects time and effort that would be better spent studying the creatures. Need I remind you that last week alone we lost 53 civilians to creatures attacking us within our own walls? They're killing unarmed citizens in their homes, their canteens, their workplaces. That is where our focus must be.
Killing a soldier doesn't sit right with me. It's a betrayal of our own people,
inserted the military police rep.
On the contrary, it's asking him to make the ultimate sacrifice for the good of his country. I do not take such a demand lightly. My son was a soldier. I am aware of the implications of my words. If it were him in this position, I would be looking to spare him any further pain.
How do you know he's in pain? Said Lucy abruptly, her head pounding.
We've seen from the footage the way this disease goes. The Major is at the early stages. Acting now will be a mercy, said Adrian, taken aback at Lucy's interruption.
A mercy? God help the rest of us if we ever need your mercy, Senator, said Lucy, meeting Adrian's livid glare.
Let's keep this objective, shall we?
Said the chair, intervening before Adrian could launch into a tirade that was brewing on his furious lips. Lucy stared back at the table, doing her best not to scream. She could feel Adrian's eyes boring into her skull. He sat down and drew his chair in sharply so that he was bolt upright, elbows on the table.
The profile of this pathogen matches reports from cities further north. We cannot allow DC to suffer their fate. We are on the brink of losing our most critical societal knowledge, and another outbreak will send us back to the Dark Ages. We will lose the last engineers, the last doctors, the last teachers. We're mere months away from total regression into subsistence. Our focus must be on defense and agriculture, insisted Adrian.
Harvey leaned back in his chair and mused for a moment, stroking his fluffy white sideburns, which fed into the fulsome white beard adorning his chin.
While I admire your intentions, Adrian, I must respectfully disagree with your conclusions, said Harvey gently.
He took off his round glasses and rubbed them with a cloth from his pocket, while the rest of the room watched expectantly. He placed the glasses back on with both hands, then folded the cloth in four and stowed it neatly in his grubby pocket.
In my humble opinion, the fact that there are similar reports from other cities suggests to me that we have a duty to research this new pathogen, said Harvey.
I second that, said the Army R&D rep.
What about the risk of further contagion? Said the agriculture rep.
I assure you, our lab is secure, said Harvey.
No lab is foolproof, Director, especially given the level of staff churn. You're proposing to study a highly dangerous new disease in the same complex as our emergency department, said the hospital rep.
Rest assured, I will be overseeing the research myself. I propose we study patient one and attempt to halt the progression of the disease using existing medicines. We've already taken blood and tissue samples and should have our initial results within the next few hours to get us started. You're proposing to waste drugs on a dead man when they wouldn't even give my wife morphine at your damned hospital when they took her leg? No way. No freaking way,
said the agriculture rep, shaking his head vehemently. Again, let's avoid getting personal here, said the chair.
He's not a dead man, he's a living human being. Will anybody here recognize that? Said Lucy, looking around the room imploringly.
Quite. Patient one may yet recover or respond to treatments, and that's knowledge we should have, said Harvey, opening his palms to the room with an earnest twinkle in his eye.
Adrian, anything to add before we vote? Asked the chair.
Don't let one individual's plight distract you. Sinking time and labor into a fringe case will undermine our core mission. Our duty and focus should be to the vulnerable men and women living within these walls, who are dying at the hands of D4 creatures every day, and who will starve if we don't fix the food problem, said Adrian, eyeballing the attendees.
All in favor of the senator's proposal to euthanize patient one, raise your hand, said the chair.
Three hands went up from agriculture, public health, and Adrian's own.
And those in favor of keeping patient one contained and studying the pathogen.
Lucy's hand shot up, closely followed by hands from Harvey, the military police, Army R&D, and, less enthusiastically, from the hospital reps.
You don't have voting rights here, Miss Young. Please lower your hand, said the chair, curtly.
Lucy lowered her hand, blushing furiously. Adrian looked around the room in disbelief and shook his head.
Motion passed by a clear majority. Patient one will receive treatment in isolation. Thank you all,
said the chair, bringing the meeting to a swift close. Adrian stood sharply and made a beeline for the public health and agriculture reps, who quickly delved into a conversation of fast pace and hushed tones, huddled in a corner with their backs to the rest of the room. The director of pathology gave the chair a gracious nod and left the room.
Lucy rushed after him. "Excuse me, sir," she said, catching him a little into the corridor.
"I don't think we've had the pleasure," said Harvey warmly.
"Lucy Young, I work for Health Intelligence," she said breathlessly.
"Adrian's new protege. I've heard you're quite the detective."
"I want to work on the patient one case," said Lucy, clipping the end of his sentence. He peered at her for a moment, his eyes amplified by the thick, round lenses sitting on his button nose.
"Oh?"
said Harvey, sliding his hand into the grubby pockets of his baggy lab coat. "I've studied D4 in other forms, and I've got lab experience."
"Have you cleared it with Adrian?"
"Is he senior to you?"
"We're equals, inasmuch as any two people can be," said Harvey.
"The council just passed a motion requiring human resource. I'm qualified, and I'm volunteering. Take me on your team," said Lucy assertively. Harvey's eyes twinkled. The door swung open, and the other council members bustled by.
"I accept your proposal, Miss Young," said Harvey, leaving her to join the group.
"Lucy, a word?"
said Adrian, summoning her back to the room. She braced herself and re-entered. Adrian had moved to the window and was staring out at the park beyond with his hands folded behind his back.
"You mind telling me what that was?"
he said, turning his head, his eyes narrow with anger. "I offered my opinion," said Lucy, shifting uncomfortably.
"I don't remember asking for it."
"Why invite me, then?"
"To learn. I trusted you, and instead you publicly undermined me," fumed Adrian, turning from the window to face her fully.
"You wanted to get an innocent man killed.
To save countless more. I made my reasons very clear. I don't want any of this."
"I had to follow my conscience."
"The insinuation you're making is both misplaced and deeply offensive."
"Maybe you're not used to being challenged."
"I don't know what's going on with you, but whatever it is, I strongly advise you to take a step back and check yourself. If you're going to help this city, you need to put knee-jerk reactions to the side and look at the big picture," said Adrian, drawing a deep breath to control the quivering rage in his voice.
"By writing off an innocent soldier to protect your department's workload?" said Lucy, her anger fueled by the thought of Lopez being strapped down for lethal injection.
"You seem awfully attached to this one patient and totally unconcerned about the 80,000 other people in this city who will be next if we allow what he has to spread."
Lucy felt her cheeks burning. She clamped the hems of her jacket down against her wrists and marched to the far side of the room, where she stared from the window, imitating Adrian's former stance and stalling for time.
"The chair was right. To serve this city properly, you need to depersonalize your arguments."
"This all explains so much. I finally know where Dan got his insane emotional detachment from." She regretted the words as soon as they tumbled from her lips. Adrian's face twisted with anger and disbelief.
"You're bringing my son into this? I pulled every last string I had to get the pair of you onto that evacuation train. You have no idea what it cost me. And here you stand using his name to win an argument after you let him die alone in the wreckage," quaked Adrian.
He threw over a chair and stormed from the room. Lucy slumped against the wall and broke down in tears. After a moment, the soldier guarding the door interrupted tentatively.
Sorry, miss, I gotta close this room up," he said awkwardly.
"Right, of course," said Lucy, rising to her feet and wiping the tears from her eyes.
"For what it's worth, I appreciate you sticking up for us," said the soldier.
Lucy gave him a fleeting, watery smile and hurried from the room. Memories of the debts she owed Lopez clawed at her mind. She had to help him. She had to get inside that lab. She hurried out into the lobby, sniffing, and stepped out into the bright daylight. Harvey was bidding goodbye to two remaining council members.
"Ah, if it isn't my newest recruit,"
he said, spotting her and gesturing to his vehicle.
"Let's get to work,"